From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And it's time for our reporter roundtable, where we talk about what's been making headlines across the state. In a few minutes, we'll hear from reporters in Springfield and Peoria. But first, we're going to talk about a tragic story out of Rushville, Illinois, which is in the west central part of the state, about a half hour south of Macomb. Five people are dead after a school bus collided with a truck earlier this week. Joining us to talk about this is Rich Egger, news director at WIUM, Tri-States Public Radio. Rich, welcome back to the show. Tell us more about what happened.
Well, it's, of course, still under investigation, but it appears the school bus swerved into the oncoming lane of traffic and hit the semi-truck head-on. Both drivers were killed, as were three children, young children on the bus.
And I understand that the truck was carrying sand. What do we know about, or don't we know yet exactly what might have caused the bus to veer into the other lane of traffic?
Yeah, that we don't know. It's still under investigation. Any number of things could have happened, but we don't know why the bus swerved into the oncoming lane.
Do we know the identities of the people who have died?
We do have the names of the people who passed away. And of course, I can't find that information right in front of me, but we do have the identities of the people. The semi-truck driver, 72-year-old David Kaufel of Browning, which is in Schuyler County. The bus driver, 57-year-old Angela Spiker of Rushville. The three children on the bus at the time of the crash were 5-year-old Maria Miller, 3-year-old Andrew Miller, and 3-year-old Noah Driscoll, all of Rushville. Maria and Andrew were siblings.
Oh, my God. What responses have you been hearing from the community about this?
Well, the community held a candlelight prayer vigil on a Wednesday night, drew hundreds of mourners, not just from Rushville or Schuyler County, but from throughout the region. And everyone is just, you know, trying to get past this, trying to help those who were seriously affected, and urging people not to look for blame. You know, this was a horrible accident. It could have happened to anybody at any time. That's what Pastor Stacy Tomich of the Rushville First United Methodist Church said. Let's not look for blame. Let's look for ways to heal and recover from this.
We actually have some tape. You mentioned you were at this vigil, candlelight vigil, on Wednesday night. We have a little bit of your tape from that. Let's take a listen.
Amazing grace, how sweet.
Maybe you can set the scene a little more. You mentioned there was a pastor. Who else turned out for this?
Well, many members of the faith community in Rushville, various speakers from different churches, and you had the band. You heard up there playing live. An evening of prayer, an evening of trying to heal and recover, like I said.
So what's next? What are you going to be watching for? You mentioned there's an investigation still underway.
Yeah, we'll see if investigators are able to figure out what exactly happened to cause the bus to go into the oncoming lane of traffic. Both vehicles were pretty seriously damaged. Both caught fire. So it could be a difficult investigation, but we'll certainly be keeping our ears open, and we'll be, you know, connecting with people in Rushville to see how they're doing.
Last thing, Rich, there are always fundraisers after tragedies like this. If people are interested in helping, what can they do?
Well, a bank account is set up at Rushville State Bank. Rushville City Hall is accepting monetary donations. And they, the mayor mentioned to me the other night, they've been getting donations at City Hall and been taking them to the bank. Life Family Church of Virginia, Illinois in neighboring Cass County is collecting funds for the Miller family. And the Rova Community School District in Knox County had asked students and staff to wear purple and gold. Many neighboring school districts have worn purple and gold, which are the Schuyler Industry colors, to show solidarity with the school district. But yeah, the bank account at Rushville State Bank, donations can be made at City Hall, and Life Family Church of Virginia, Illinois is collecting funds for the Miller family.
You know, one other aspect of this story I forgot to ask you about is that I understand Governor J.B. Pritzker reached out to city officials in Rushville. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, Mayor Jeff Urban says he received a call from the governor. He was surprised. The governor offered the state's help, you know, any resources that the state has available, counseling for police, other first responders, anything else. The mayor said that was a very nice gesture. He really appreciated the governor reaching out.
Interesting. All right. Well, Rich Egger is news director at WIUM Tri-States Public Radio. Rich, thank you for your time and sharing your reporting with us today.
Sure thing. Have a good day.
This is the 21st Show. We continue our local news roundup now by moving east and south to talk about what's been happening in Springfield, our state's capital city. Joining us now for that is Dean Olson, senior staff writer at the Illinois Times newspaper in Springfield. Dean, welcome back to the program. Good to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dean, another dark story out of Springfield this week. There's a man who's been arrested and charged with operating houses of prostitution. What is the story there?
Well, this is kind of an unusual case here. Gregory Frazee is a six-year-old Springfield man, and he was arrested a few weeks ago, and it only became public recently because some of the records were sealed until there was a federal indictment. But he was charged along with another woman, a Chinese female, Ji Lu. We're not sure where she exactly is, but she was living in Springfield recently. They were charged with conspiracy to operate houses of prostitution out of businesses that were advertised as Asian spas or Asian massage parlors. And so this apparently had been going on for several years. And Greg Frazee is interesting because he is both the brother of a Sangamon County board member, and he works for the Sangamon County Water Reclamation District, which processes all the sewer waste. And so that's a public entity. He has been working there more than 20 years. And so he has been arrested. He's on his own recognizance now. The charges against him could land him in prison for up to 10 years because he also was charged with marriage fraud, basically marrying a woman from Asia who is apparently currently his wife and violating immigration laws because the allegation is that he was paid to marry her, to bring her over, and many people who marry American citizens have an easier time of gaining American citizenship or a green card, and that was the allegation. So we just don't see federal charges like this every day in Springfield, and the federal prosecutor's office alluded to the fact that other people might be arrested as well. The main FBI agent involved in this is part of a public corruption task force. So it's unclear to me what the public corruption is, if any, although sometimes when federal prosecutors investigate these things, they arrest people on the outer edge of a conspiracy first, and they're going for the bigger fish later, but we don't know if that's going to happen. Frazee allegedly made a statement to the investigator that he was able to get zoning approval and other business approval because of his connections. Connections with who, we really don't know. And so that's the status of the situation right now. It's still proceeding through the courts.
Yeah, and I think the indictment alleges that something, the earnings were something like $800,000. I got to be honest with you, I had never noticed these businesses in Springfield. Apparently, there were several of them. You've had a couple of stories on this now. I mean, is this part of the sort of the broader story where people talk about human trafficking and it can happen anywhere?
Yes, there are allegations that some of these people who worked in the massage parlors were women from Asia, and that they had come from desperate situations in Asia, and were just desperate to get over and work in the United States, where in the allegations it said that they could earn up to between $10,000 and $30,000 per month in tips. They were paid basic wages, but in exchange for basic various sexual services. And then all of the details of this have not been spelled out, you know, if the 800,000 represents tips that the women got or just revenue to Frazee and his associates. We really don't know. And as this grows, it'll be pretty interesting, especially if there are powerful people involved. These places are dotted all over town, and they stay open late at night. They're open on the weekends till like 10, 11 at night. And the parking lot, I've driven by them coming home from work sometimes late. They're filled. The parking lots are filled. So there are, and in the allegations, it mentions that there were places also that were owned in Bloomington and Washington, Illinois, although we really don't know details of that. So it may involve Asian trafficking, we really don't know, but it'll be an interesting story to follow.
Yeah, fascinating to see how this develops out. All right, let's pivot now to talk about another story you covered recently. You got the chance to speak with Teresa Haley, president of the Springfield NAACP, had been the statewide president of the NAACP, although after comments in December, where she reportedly called immigrants at the U.S.-Mexico border, quote-unquote, savages, she was suspended from that position. What did she have to say about this when you spoke with her?
She basically said that she regretted that the use of the term savages in that call, which was actually in late November, and it was recorded surreptitiously by one of her critics, who was at the time the head of the DuPage County. It's a multi-county NAACP chapter. She said she regretted the use of that term, but felt she was being criticized unfairly and it was taken out of context. So she, you know, I think she feels like she's given her life to this organization. She's retired from the state, devotes a lot of time to it. The building that she owns is used by the NAACP branch in Springfield. They operate an alternative high school out of there. Teresa has worked really hard. She was recognized nationally by the NAACP as the activist of the year in 2020. And so she basically spoke around the time of the MLK celebration in January, and that's when I went and talked with her. So That's how she felt. She has, because it was unclear whether she was suspended from the local branch as well, the NAACP has not been clear about that. Nationally, they're in Baltimore. She has stayed away from being an official voice of the NAACP, but she's still active and she's still working for things like the National Historic Monument that is trying to be established in Springfield for the 1908 race riot site. She's still involved in working to get Congress to give that a national historic status, and she's poured her whole life into that.
All right, just about a minute and a half remaining in our time together. Maybe we can end on a little bit more of an upbeat note, which is an effort to revitalize part of Route 66 in Springfield. This is where 9th Street meets Peoria Road, a little bit south of the fairgrounds, if people are familiar with the geography there. What are some of the plans there, briefly?
Sure. The plans are that our local regional planning commission has given put out a master plan for the development of that road to improve it, to try to get developers more interested in improving the road, developing housing projects and commercial developments along it. They're planning, they're hoping that IDOT will resurface the road before the 2026, the centennial of Route 66, when more than 1 million new visitors are expected to come down. Eventually, they want to reduce the number of lanes in the road, so it's not kind of a racetrack during that part of the section of the road south of the fairgrounds. And they eventually want to really focus on tourism developments, put more things next to the road other than parking lots. Peoria, Springfield is known for a lot of parking lots, and they wanted to make it a more walkable neighborhood feel rather than just a temporary place where state workers and other workers park along roads.
Yeah, there are a lot of parking lots in that area.
Oh my gosh,
right?
Yes.
All right, Dean Olson, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your reporting with us on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Dean Olson is senior reporter at Illinois Times. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are ending our reporter roundtable this week in Peoria, where we are joined now by Isabella Nieto, student reporter for WCBU, Peoria Public Radio. Isabella, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to begin with a nonprofit group made up of retired truck drivers. They are collecting donations for a cause. What can you tell me about them?
Yeah, for sure. So this group of retired truck drivers formed this nonprofit called Three Feathers Outreach. They take supplies, donated supplies out to reservations in North and South Dakota, and they transport stuff such as furniture, household goods, cleaning supplies. They do house repairs on the living structures that are on the reservations. And they started this because they noticed that there was a pretty big difference in the resources that are available on reservations versus urban or suburban areas. So that's kind of how that started out.
Is there a connection from Peoria and this reservation? I think it's on the Great Plains.
Yeah. So the founder of Three Feathers Outreach attends the Day Springs Church in East Peoria, which is a Native American church as well. And they sort of brought awareness to their members about the disparities that people living on reservations face. And they also, that's where the founder, Brad Beard, met some other of his fellow truck drivers, where they founded and decided to found the Three Feathers Outreach organization.
All right, moving on to another story in Peoria, and that is the Animal Protection Services there. They're looking for public input on how to control the stray cat population. Talk about that. Are you overwhelmed with cats in Peoria?
Not really, but there is a pretty big population of stray cats that are in some of the outer areas of Peoria. So the Peoria County Animal Protection Services is putting out this survey to find out what the Peoria County residents think about a trap, neuter, and release program would do. So that means they would trap stray and feral cats. They would sterilize them by spaying or neutering them. And then they would release them back to the area they were found, which would keep them from growing the population while also providing the benefits that they do for the ecosystem there, which is sort of like natural pest control, fertilization, and stuff like that.
I was going to ask you about the benefits, because, I mean, there are some people who say that cats are kind of a menace for birds. What are some of the benefits as people see them?
So cats can provide a natural rodent control. They do a really good job of keeping rat and mouse populations down, squirrel populations down. They keep those rodents from overpopulating the areas and just overwhelming the ecosystem in these areas.
Okay, that makes sense. Speaking of animals, although moving from the feline variety to the avian variety, I understand East Peoria residents can now keep chickens on their property. What's the story there?
Yeah, so they re recently approved an ordinance allowing people to obtain special use permits to keep chickens on their properties within city limits. They can keep up to 5 hens and no roosters are allowed within city limits. There are 10 of these special use permits available, but it's a pilot project which will be continuing for a year and it'll be evaluated at the end of the year to see whether it's actually something they want to implement permanently into East Peoria.
Do you have a sense as to whether there's a lot of interest? I mean, are people wanting to make their own eggs in their backyard or something, or does that remain to be seen right now?
Yeah, so when I spoke to Ty Livingston, who is the director of planning and community development in East Peoria. He said that there was a lot of public interest, and this has been an issue in East Peoria for a long time. A lot of people have been wanting to keep chickens on their property, have been asking city officials and employees about whether they can, whether that it would be allowed. So they finally decided to move forward with creating this language. The Zoning Board of Appeals started this process a little bit ago, but since then it has been approved by the city council and commissioners as well.
All right, last story I want to ask you about is has to do with the Peoria School District and getting electric school buses. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so the Peoria School District was part of a six was granted a certain amount of money by the federal government. They had granted about 6 million federal grant money dollars from the Environmental Protection Agency to Illinois schools. So three Illinois applicants were selected for the Clean School Bus Grants competition, and they've been allowed to implement 15 electric school buses into their fleets, which will be housed at the district building and everything.
Isabella Nieto is a student reporter at WCBU Peoria Public Radio. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you for having me.
I want to mention before we continue, we're going to get to our politics roundtable in about a minute here, but I do want to mention two stories we are working on for about, well, I was going to say a month from now, but it's just a few weeks from now. There's going to be an eclipse. You've heard me say this before, going across southern Illinois, a great solar eclipse, a total solar eclipse. We're going to be talking about it on the program. We'd love to hear your experiences if you got to see the one a few years back in southern Illinois, if you have plans to see the one that's coming up. Call and leave us a voicemail at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. That's going to be in the coming weeks. Then next week on the program, next Thursday actually, we're going to be marking 4 years since Governor Pritzker's stay-at-home orders took effect in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. For the millions of people who have died from COVID, there are thousands more who've been living for months, in some cases years, with symptoms of long COVID. If you or someone you know is living with long COVID, how has it affected you? And are we doing enough to help people dealing with this? You can let us know by leaving a voicemail. Please share your story at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121.